Yoga Vashishta, Part 19 by Swami Surya Devananda. Salutations to that reality in which all the elements and all the animate and inanimate beings shine as if they have an independent existence, and in which they exist for a time and into which they merge. Salutations to that consciousness which is the source of the apparently distinct threefold divisions of knower, knowledge and known, seer, sight and seen, doer, doing and deed. Salutations to that bliss absolute, the ocean of bliss, which is the life of all beings whose happiness and unfoldment is derived from the shower of spray from that ocean of bliss. Last time, we discussed the third of the seven states or planes of wisdom, Tanumanasa or Tanumanasi, or the thinned and weakened mind. We also talked about the characteristics of the one in this state. Let us review them briefly. One assimilates the teachings of the scriptures, lives with masters, and listens to their teachings. Two, being indifferent to this world. And remember, the word indifferent is not hateful. It means not seeing things differently, which is a very high and exalted quality. Usually when we say indifferent, we think of someone cold and clammy, but that is a wrong way to look at the word. Indifferent means non-different between this, that, and the other. So being indifferent to this world, one leads a very disciplined life away from society and completely free from all contacts. Three, practice of the teachings result in right perception of what is. And four, the spirit of non-attachment of both types increases. Today, we continue with the seven states or planes of wisdom and look at Sattvapatti, the fourth state, which is the natural turning away from sense pleasure and dwelling in truth. Towards this end, we have about 4 points that we will discuss. Do what needs to be done on its own merit. Refrain from doing what should not be done. Live a simple and natural life. Live in accordance with the teachings. Engage in appropriate activity and accept what happens. A few thoughts before we begin. As with our previous sessions, repetition of certain themes or teachings is necessary. Just as a doctor may prescribe medication or treatment, discontinue it and include it once again in the regimen. Similarly, inclusion of certain practices is natural and necessary in spiritual ascent. Vashishtha's potent remedies include certain instructions that may have been mentioned earlier, as the current step requires its inclusion. See, my friends, yoga is not a linear path. There's a lot of adjustments back and forth at every stage. Being methodical by diligently maintaining a spiritual diary is a good way to get an accurate feel for the adjustment needed as one treads. Greetings. Today we take up Sattvapatti, which is the natural turning away from sense pleasure and dwelling in truth. These two happen at the same time. But let's put all this in perspective first. When the first three states, which is having a noble wish, continual and direct steady observation of the mind, and a thinning or the weakening of the mind, are practiced together, and the key word is together, the seeker naturally turns away from sense pleasure and dwells in truth. He sees that sense pleasures are nothing but reactions of the mind in itself, by itself. Goodness sprouts and blossoms And one gradually, the seeker gradually overcomes ignorance. Right perception arises and the vision of division ceases. So in this fourth stage, the big difference or the big thing is diversity is overcome. When we do not practice this multiplicity or diversity, it ceases. When you practice fullness or wholeness, it blossoms. Just the same way as when you practice goodness, it flourishes. So also the practice of diversity is what has got us into this mess. When we practice unity, we experience unity. Diversity and conditioning, my friends, are the same thing. They are not different. Conditioning is a certain reaction to elements of diversity. I am different, this is different, that is different. And then comes a whole ball of wax. How do I deal with them? How do I put things in my advantage, etc., etc.? What's acceptable, what's not? And all the confusion that follows. But where, just where do we know diversity? Within ourselves. Where do we know that I am different from this or that is different from the other? Within ourselves. Within oneness, diversity is known. And this, my friends, very often or mostly goes unexamined. Diversity is known in unity. It cannot be known in diversity. It's just not possible. Think about it for yourself. If you close your eyes for a minute, where do we know all these diverse things that pop up in our mind? In the oneness of being. And who knows them? The same one. In the one, the manyness is known. This has to be seen through very, very clearly. When we see that diversity and conditioning are the same, we move towards overcoming them. And that's what the first three stages are designed to do. The fourth gets us established gradually in the oneness by turning away from the lure of the many, from the sense pleasures that they promise, and dwelling and abiding in the oneness or in the truth. The world which appears so very real, my friends, is perceived as a sort of dream. When we stop thinking of things as different, apart, and out there, they stop acting as such. They start coming together. The whole picture starts to gel together. This is why this fourth stage is compared to a sort of dream. A dream state, because what was perceived to be so real, the manyness, the diversity, and the outsideness begins to lose its steam. It begins to melt. So without the play of conditioning, purity or sattva blossoms in the heart. And this blossoming is called sattvapati. Until diversity starts blending or melting, this inner goodness does not blossom in the heart. See, my friends, just think about it. When you may not know a person, and by whatever situation, this person may become part of your family tomorrow. There may be a marriage or there may be something else. At that point, you no longer look at that person as an outsider, as one of us, one of the family. Your attitude towards a person changes. When your attitude towards a person changes, certain concerns that may be there about others becomes irrelevant. When the person is one of you, one of the family, considered one and the same thing as me, myself, then the feelings towards that person are different. So also, without the play of conditioning, purity or sattva or goodness blossoms. When there is no manyness, when there is no other, other maybe is there as an appearance, but when you begin seeing through it, that otherness is an appearance, not a reality, then your attitude towards what you considered, earlier considered other or out there, begins to change in your heart. And when that begins to change, goodness blossoms. Just like when you look at someone as your own, then your attitude towards that person changes, and a certain feeling of goodness towards that person wellness, goodness, positiveness seems to blossom in your heart, that this person is now my friend or whatever be the case. And this inner blossoming of goodness is called satvapati. The seeker then naturally turns away from sense pleasure because he realizes that there is no other. The pleasure that is experienced is a pleasure of the self that is experienced within. And when that is seen, the circuit of seeking pleasure through the outer, through this, through a person, through a condition, through a certain thing, that whole circuit begins to fade out. So along with the three stages covered earlier, we have today four principles that will help bring about this state of satvapati. Let us look into them. Let us start with the first of the four principles that we have laid out towards this satvapati or blossoming of inner goodness. One, do what needs to be done because it needs to be done and not for any other purpose. My friends, it may seem very alien and strange at first. What do you mean for not for any other purpose? I work for a paycheck, or I work for this, or I work for my family, or I work for that. But examine it. Let's look at things beyond that. Why does it have to be, you may get paid for certain work. You may have a salary, you may have all that. Still, the work in itself, if you do it because it needs to be done wholeheartedly, without any other feeling that I will do, if it needs to be done, why not do it wholeheartedly in the first place? It's then that you can actually do something better. You cannot do something better or really well if it's always lingering in the back of my mind, what's in it for me? Because part of your energy will go towards that. And if you feel at any stage that it's not worth it, you wouldn't do as good a job. Why would you not do as good a job if it has to be done in the first place? If it has to be done, do it well. It can only be to your benefit in any way, in every way. So this is something we have to take off that filter of what's in it for me and do something wholeheartedly. When you do it wholeheartedly, my friends, this is a super bonus that comes to you. The what's in it for me, that me starts weakening when you pay less attention or don't include it in the formula of action. When you take it out of action, it starts weakening in perception. When you take it out of action, it starts becoming a lesser consideration for you, and the concept or the idea or the gravity of I becomes weaker and weaker and weaker in your life. When you weaken the ego, goodness or the fullness of your true nature starts blossoming. Our true nature does not blossom because of the heavy filter of our ego, which has been self-placed, self-nourished, self-sustained. We ourselves sustain that which blocks our true happiness, my friends. This has to be seen very, very clearly. So action, aside from everything else, is a way to calibrate the mind and heart to its natural state. Action is really not for something else. We are not here to do something for this or for that or for any other purpose. The paycheck and everything else is incidental. It will come. You need not chase something that will come naturally when you do a good job, when you do your best. It will come. There's no reason to go after it. So no matter what the action or field of activity, action is a way to calibrate the mind and heart to its natural state. In doing so, we also become aware of all of our motivations by vicharana, which is watching the mind relentlessly. And when you watch it, along with everything that is outside, the mind starts getting thinner and thinner and thinner. Why? Because all of these things that we thought were part of the condition are now seen as part of our reactions to them. oh, that person is coming. It's no longer that person, it's this person. The thatness, the attitude towards that person was our mind and its conditioning. When we begin seeing that, conditioning weakens and eventually drops off. And as conditioning drops off, my friends, the natural and true state of things starts becoming visible to ourselves. So the ego will always suggest ways that are self-serving. But the footing that we have made in our spiritual journey, in our spiritual path, will always talk about what is best. This is our hurdle that the seeker has to overcome. What's in it for me? Is that worth it? Or what is best? Which one of these two delivers more? Which one of these two can I count on? Which one of these two does good for and by others and by the situation? So this is something that each one is going to examine. In each situation, do what is best, which is the same as what needs to be done. What needs to be done is very different from what's in it for me. Do something because it needs to be done. And ask yourself this, my friends. Yesterday or last week, what were all the things that I did on its own merit because it needed to be done? Now raise the bar a little bit. What in it did I do wholeheartedly, like it was the best thing or the only thing that really mattered? And then you'll see that the list becomes very thin. My friends, when you take this attitude, the attitude of what's in it for me weakens, along with it, all of the selfishness and anxiety and suspicion and prejudging and all of that, that whole ball of wax starts crumbling. That whole pyramid just starts crumbling down. We stand together with things when you do things on its own nature. You stand together with things. Let me give you a simple example so we're not just talking philosophy. You walk by the road and you see something, a piece of glass or something on the road, a banana peel. You pick it up and put it in the trash can. Not because it's a good deed, because it needed to be done. As simple as that. It doesn't belong there. You're not worried about who takes a picture and who thanks you or whatever down the line. You just pick it up and put it away. You see something as you're walking in front of your neighbor's house, and you don't think at that moment, oh, it's not my property, why should I clean something off it? You pick it up and put it away. As simple as that. The my and not my is not paid attention to. And that my and not my starts weakening because the field of action is an equal level playing field when it's approached with this attitude of the right thing to do on its own merit, not because of anything else at all. That is a great leveler for the mind, my friends. People always often ask me, what do we do about this turbulent mind for meditation? And this is basically what we're talking about, my friends. We're not talking about some sort of do good, feel good sort of vain philosophy. It all comes down to this. The mind for meditation is trained off the mat. It's trained in our normal day-to-day, work-to-day life. If we are not going to calibrate it there, we are not going to have an instrument for meditation. And without an instrument for meditation, my friends, how can we ever think of knowing the self or our true nature? So for all this, we have to look at everything fresh. All things are fresh without the interference of conditioning. And how do we do this? By bringing conditioning into the field of observation. We spoke of this last time. The outer and the inner are seen in the same mind. So it is very easy, not easy, but possible to continually be aware of the outer and inner at the same time without any break. When the outer and inner are seen together and the outer is dealt with for what it is, the inner promptings of the mind start weakening, and gradually the inner promptings start receding. Weakening conditioning in and through our daily lives is essential and necessary for meditation. It is the same mind that that we meditate with. The mind, driven by the ego, even in the hours of meditation, will be just like a looking glass for the ego's agenda. This is another thing that I have heard. I close my eyes and all that I see is a whole bunch of thoughts. When is that ever going to cease? When the bunch of thoughts that you see are seen as different from you. But if that bunch of thoughts is included in the outer all the time and kept in the picture all the time, that bunch of thoughts will weaken because they are seen for what they are. When they are not seen for what they are, they prop up and they are seen as, what do I do about these thoughts? That these and the these thoughts, the distractions as we call them, are only this error. So the mind that through action has calibrated itself out of self-centeredness. In action, we see our mind. We see our mind and we see what needs to be done. We do what needs to be done and we ignore the promptings of the mind while being aware of them. This weakens the mind. And you'll be able to get past the ego's promptings in meditation as well. See, my friends, there is no conflict at all if we look at life as duty, doing what needs to be done when it needs to be done. Now, I hear sometimes that if you do it that way, life seems sort of mechanical and it takes out the flavor of life. My friends, it actually gives you the true flavor of life. You know things, how they are, and you know where things and where people stand when you live life on principle. When you do things because it needs to be done, you focus on the side of rightness, of correctness, of principle, and therefore you make less error. Great satisfaction and peace is felt when selfishness is gradually purged out of the system. Selfishness, my friends, does not promote inner peace. It does not promote wellness. The what's in it for me, or me first, or my people first, puts you last at the end of the line. You may think in the short run that it puts you and your interests first, but it really works the other way when examined carefully, because it ruins all hope of peace and harmony, both for ourselves and for others. By ourselves, because of increasing the turmoil, what's in it for me, the idea of me with all of my likes and dislikes increases. And when I have all these likes and dislikes, how can I be well, peaceful, and happy? So it destroys peace in the attempt to get peace. Can that ever happen, my friends? Think about it. And for others, because if I'm going to put my interest first and you are going to put your interest first, we're always at odds. How can we ever meaningfully get along? Let's have a relationship. So this is especially relevant today, my friends, as nowadays, as you well know, there is a heavy impetus on individuality and me first that is culled into the very fabric of our youth in the education system. Me first, whatever, and all these are infused by our hearts and minds very early by the very nature of society as it has grown over time. And I'm not complaining, but I'm making a very careful observation of how things actually are. So these are major blocks in spiritual progress, but they're also blocks in leading a sane, peaceful, and happy life. For example, in feeling part of one family, what needs to be done, and in the best way possible, you do that with your family. Why can't the fabric of this understanding be extended beyond what you call your family? You do things in this way with your family because it promotes peace and harmony within the family. Well, wouldn't it be nice to have that same feeling on a greater level? Now, you might say that if you do that, people will take advantage of you. But you do what needs to be done as it needs to be done. For example, you're at work and you know that your work may be appreciated or may not be appreciated, but you still do a good job. And you do a good job not because it may be appreciated more, but because it needs to be done. So you take your satisfaction out of doing. And since doing is in your control, you're always satisfied. But outcome is not always in your control. And so if you put your weight or gravity on outcome, how things will turn out, you'd always be waiting, guessing, hoping. And that's no way to be happy. So with a family, we manage or we learn how to take this out. That feeling needs to be extended to the larger family, not just of humanity, but of all creation. When the family unit is placed ahead of ahead of individuality, there can be harmony. So when it is placed in a larger level, there is this feeling of harmony with the larger world or the world at large. This giving up of individuality, my friends, is not a loss, but a gain. Because the giving up of individuality is at once embracing universality. This is something that we don't see. We always think about the loss, but we never see the glasses beyond half full or the gain. So in spiritual life, universalizing one's existence is essential. As the ego cannot do yoga. The ego cannot do yoga. Yoga is the underlying unity of all things. To discover or to rediscover the underlying unity of all things is yoga. This cannot be done if I'm going to stand apart from them. Only the universal can seek the universal. In the Bhagavad Gita, we are told, seek the self by the self. Like can seek like. Like can know like. Two unlike things can never know each other, less contact each other. So my friends, let's sort of pull this thing together. Action is not a field to build an empire, to do all the other things or anything else. It could be, but that's for those that have not examined this a little bit closer. When you examine this a little bit closer, action is a field for spiritual progress or spiritual unfoldment or inner ascent. Action affords a view into the deeper part of the mind that does not usually become visible or is not usually in the conscious field of observation for many reasons. Action is also an opportunity to calibrate the mind back to its, or restore the mind back to its natural universal state by letting the existing conditioning exhaust itself, and gradually the mind is restored to its universal or non-fragmented state. The only purpose of all action, my friends, is to see the mind and to heal the mind. Nothing else. Whatever that action be, whether it be your career, personal life, or whatever, to see myself, to see the mind as it is, and to think, act, perceive, and the whole lot differently, so the mind is calibrated and healed back to its natural state. This is the only purpose of all action, and anything short is to deny ourselves the full potential or promise of every action. All other purposes may for the moment appear to deliver more, but they actually take away in the long run. They take away in truth because they take away from the sense of self. I can have a lot of things, but if my sense of self is I, me, one person, I'm still a small man, a small person, one person, and that's that whole world. I may own the company, but I am still a small person because I am apart from all of that. When the idea of I expands, I may have less out there. But if I feel bigger within myself, within my heart, within my understanding, a lot has been accomplished. We can grow things out there, our interests, our bank account, all of things. But what about growing your own self? We came with ourselves, we go with ourselves. Let us do something for our own sense of self. And this is why doing what needs to be done because it needs to be done and not for any other purpose takes purpose out of the equation. And it gives value to doing things wholeheartedly, and there is an inner blossoming that takes place with that. We've just spoken about doing what needs to be done because it needs to be done and not for any other purpose. And we must talk about the second part also, the flip part of it, which is our second point. Refrain from doing what should not be done, knowing intuitively or in the heart that it should not be done. So this whole idea of logic and all of that doesn't come into play. We feel in the heart that this should not be done, this should not be said, this should not be thought of, and it's not done. And we don't do this by starting at this end first. Doing what needs to be done, the ego is going to prompt other things, its own agenda. Seeing it for what it is, not giving into that path of release resistance, and instead focusing more on correctness, on rightitude, on what needs to be done, is a sure way to weaken the mind of its conditioning completely. And my friends, we've been talking again and again about this, but a weakened and conditioned mind is an easy path for meditation. When you take all the weeds out of the garden, you can plant new beautiful flowers out there. What's the point of planting flowers when all the weeds are going to take over that place? How difficult would that be, and what would it attain? So the same way, all our spiritual practices get countered by the ego and its ways and never really take root. We never experience the fullness of being. What does that accomplish? So along with doing what needs to be done, vicharana, or unrelenting vigilance, also lets us be aware of the mind's habitual promptings. This, that, what's in it for me, all the other stuff. And we look and avoid what should not be done by better selections instead. The whole struggle comes out when this equation comes together. What needs to be done? Be aware of the inner promptings of what ego would like to do. Not doing what needs to be done by instead doing what needs to be done. What does not need to be done by instead doing what needs to be done. This is the double mechanism, the alpha omega. Do and avoid. Avoid by doing the good. This alpha omega will help restore the mind to its natural state. All action, my friends, and we are talking about the whole spectrum of action. Action doesn't just mean physical things. It means feeling, thought, communication, and action. All four of them, this is a spectrum. Feeling, thought, communication, and action that promotes the ego should be avoided. And how so? By instead doing what needs to be done because it needs to be done. It really comes down to that much. Weakening of the ego comes down to that much. This refraining and doing happens together. The doing is refraining, and the refraining is doing. They are not two different processes. This is the alpha omega, one steady stream, one single double-sided action, or two-pronged action, if you call it that. Struggle, my friends, or inner conflict is a clear sign that there is loss of sincerity. Focus on this word sincerity again and its truest meaning. It doesn't mean one is a fake or one is a fraud or something like that. It just means that we are not fully on board. Our other interests still cling to us while we are interested in this yoga thing. It means this, that we are pulled in two directions and we haven't overcome that hurdle of being sincere or without cracks, sincere, without cracks at all. There is no other reason, my friends, for inner struggle in yoga. Results have no connection with what has to be done. This has to be very clearly seen and accepted by the heart wholesale. We have to tell ourselves again and again, results have nothing to do with what needs to be done. My business is with what needs to be done from moment to moment as it happens, and I am prepared to do what needs to be done wholeheartedly. My friends, if you can make this sankalpa or ideation in your heart, it will not only protect you, it'll be the greatest protection and it'll be the greatest insurance to always keep you happy and joyful. Let things be this way or let them be that way. What does it matter if I'm concerned with doing the right thing with all my heart, mind, and body as it happens? Ask yourself this question. Let it be. This doesn't mean we don't care. But you can't control the shape of things. You can control what you do, how you think, how you feel. And if, like we say, we're all good inside, what difference does it make how things happen? Because we are concerned with thinking, feeling, speech, or communication and action all being good. When we are concerned with all being good, being that we can control this or impact this, our life is good. It doesn't matter how things are. You can be very happy amidst everything. A lotus flower blossoms in a stagnant pond, and it's untouched by the stagnant waters around it. So this being concerned with doing the right thing, my friends, weakens inner struggle because you are not concerned with anything else. Here's a key word, including habit. When you are not concerned with habit because you live your life on principle, habit weakens. All our suffering is a result of focusing on habit. What's in it for me? My interest, all of that is all habit. This person, that person, my people, all the other stuff is all habit. My people were not my people yesterday. They were somebody else's people. All this, my people and all of those things over here have all taken root at a certain point in time, but you've been there before that. If you can restore your heart and mind to that, you can be free of all of this confusion that has somehow been added on or jumped on the bandwagon later. The heart that is wired to do the right thing does not feel pulled towards habit. But you have to rewire. You have to get this heart rewired. And when it is rewired, it does not feel pulled at all towards habit, even though habit may call. It's like someone at the door or a phone ringing that's a wrong number or whatever else, you don't answer it. Let it be. You go on with your business. You recognize that this is a call that you didn't ask for, call for, interested in. It's a marketing call or whatever. You leave it alone. When you leave things alone, things leave you alone. As simple as that. The mind and heart has to be wired to see that action is a field for restoring one's nature, not a field for doing this here and that there. See, then everything starts to come together because action as a field for restoring one's nature, there's action in work, there's action in family, there's action towards all that. When all action are given the same gravity, actions don't seem very different from one another because the underlying focus or principle that guides your action is to do things because it needs to be done, to do things well, because doing things well and wholeheartedly and without the I, me, mine, or what's in it for me, restores the mind from individuality to universality, from the petty conditioning of the ego towards its true, natural, universal state. It feels like a chain or rope that has tethered one to habit breaks loose when you take on this new attitude. It's a tremendous thing, my friends. Then there is no concern for the shape of things or how things will be or how things could turn out. We only focus on doing our best from moment to moment. When that concern for how things weakens, the I, me, or the cry of the ego also gets less and less and less. When that gets drowned out, the universal sense of universal I starts coming up to the surface. Just like, my friends, when in a turbulent pond where you throw a lot of pebbles and things, you cannot see the bottom. But what happens when the pond is placid, calm, or serene? You can see the bottom. So, my friends, when we take the agitation out of the mind, our true nature starts coming into focus. And that is tremendous joy when we realize that, first of all, we are free of the clutches and turbulence or resulting turbulence of the ego. And number two, about the largeness of your true nature, the expanse of your true nature, the joy of your true nature. My friends, this brings us to the third point that we had. Live a simple and natural life. To live a simple life means to be simple and then live simply. It doesn't work the other way. We can live simply, get a little cottage and decorate it simply and put on the act of simplicity, but the mind can be working overtime within. It can be working double time within. It can be seeing that as a way to market itself. To live a simple life starts with being simple first. And this is why I deliberately stated being simple, because before living simply, when you are simple, you just live simply. When you are good, you just do the right thing. You do the good thing. It's as simple as that. The outer appearances of this, or the appearances of outer simplicity, can have an ulterior purpose, my friends, which often stays hidden. This is why one should not jump into the simplicity by getting rid of all their things and saying, well, I'm going to put on this white cloth or orange cloth or whatever else, and I'm just going to be simple. But that complex mind can hide right within and right through all of that. It can still be a lot of complexity within or under all of that. The being simple is the important part of it. When you are simple, then being, acting simple or living simply becomes a natural corollary. It becomes a natural part of the equation. This is why, my friends, it is essential to simplify the heart and mind first. And how do we do this? Well, we've talked about it for quite a bit, but the simplest thing, my friends, the simplest number is one. So threading all of our activities and aspects of our life by one single goal, to know my true nature, that my true nature will be seen or must be seen, is a good way to simplify. When you have one principle that threads all the activities of our life, all the activities of our life that are different or appear different start blending or coming together. But the heart has to first embrace this one principle wholesale, fully on board, which is the purpose of action is to see the self and calibrate or restore our true nature. To see myself as I am and to be able to calibrate it to restore my true nature, that my true nature may be seen. This is more important today, my friends, especially today, as society places a high premium, and I'm not anti-society or nothing else, but we have to examine things as they are in the times we live, so our practice is relevant. This is not, again, society has always been at a different footing with the individual quest of spirituality. It is always of a slighter footing, not a conflict, but one has to know that we exist on one dimension on the outer and that our true nature is different. to abide in our true nature, and to be able to live harmoniously in the outer. That is a thing that we should strive for. So today there is a high premium on outer correctness, as you well know, my friends, political correctness and all the whole lot of it, and also this thing called confirmation, to confirm outwardly. You may confirm outwardly, my friends, and you may be like one of the Joes out there, but if your heart does not confirm, because each one is at a different stage in their inner evolution, and if you force an outer confirmation thing to confirm outwardly, if the inner has not embraced it, because each person is in a different state of inner evolution. So there is this conflict, my friends, and there is disharmony, though there be outer confirmation or a sort of confirming, and like you see in some societies, where there's an emphasis on outer confirmation, but there is tremendous inner conflict and inner turmoil, and these problems are evident in many different aspects or many different areas when you examine them. The outer seems to confirm, the inner doesn't go along with it, because the inner is in different stages of evolution. Until this inner is addressed, the outer may not be meaningful. So each person is in a different state of evolution, and the push to outer confirmation or to confirm outwardly can have disastrous results when the inner does not go along with it. Having a single focus that threads all the aspects of our life is a foundation for a simple life. Bring everything into one purpose first, my friends. Ask yourself, how many purposes do I have? Bring them all together. Can I not make my only purpose to see myself as I am, with all of my notions, conditioning, positives and negatives, all of that? To do what needs to be done and to do it wholeheartedly, and take all the selfish purposes out of there. When you take the selfish purposes out of there, you take selfishness out of there. When you take selfishness out of there, goodness blossoms, and goodness is its own reward. So with single focus, activity, my friends, becomes like a looking glass, and all purposes that otherwise stay hidden are brought into the field of view. Activity then becomes second to the activity's purpose, and the wholeheartedness with which it's done. These inner dynamics, when those are changed, they cause a tremendous change within. A whole revolution is set in our whole understanding, attitude, and general feeling about things. And it is deeply felt that the inner is more important than the outer. Once this is felt in the heart, there arises a genuine want for outer simplification. When inner simplification has been wholesale embraced by the heart, outer simplification becomes natural and not a put-on, and it more resembles the inner state. This chaos of outer simplification, just like when people study yoga and things like that, or do anything, or want to lose weight, they get a lot of products and things like that, and 2 days later, when the feeling is not the same, the products sit there. The items that you bought sit there. How much of this do we have? Because we start on the outer first. We start on the inner first. If you want to lose weight or get in shape or whatever, start with what you have and start today. Start now. When you start with what you have now, by doing what needs to be done, you and avoiding what is counterproductive, and start now with what you have naturally, you increase this genuine feeling of change already in the heart. Then all the things that you may get to support that will be used, and we will not just be gimmicks that lie in the garage or on your shelf unused. It's really that simple, my friends. So outer simplification becomes genuine and the reflection of inner change when which preceded it. Inner change must precede outer change. It must be the anchor. Inner change must happen, and outer change happens naturally. Friends, we come to the fourth and last point of discussion today. Live in accordance with the teachings, engage yourself in appropriate activity, and accept whatever happens naturally. This sort of brings closure to the three points we have been talking before us. Masters have gone before us. Those who have realized the truth, their own true nature, have gone before us. And they have written on the path. It is very important, my friends, that we have a fixed time set aside for study daily. We do not study the scripture, but through the scripture or the teaching, we are studying our own self. We don't just study it and put it as data accumulated, but we look at what they have written and we think of ways to practice it. And in that practice, we verify the teachings. The teachings are verified in practice. All other teachings are of absolutely no use, useless, if they are not going to be verified by our conduct in our actual life. We have to verify everything. And this is the big thing about Yoga Vedanta. Verifiable, verified, and verifiable. It doesn't ask you to go along with anything because some person said it and some person wrote it. No such thing of the kind. Take it up, verify it, and know it for yourself. One may not have regular direct contact with teachers, and in them, teachings serves as an indirect satsang, an indirect sort of company with the good. And this is also spiritual nourishment for the seeker. Teachings can serve as the teacher, if one is sincere enough to embrace them wholeheartedly. The level and the degree of embrace that you are capable of will dictate whether the teaching can be a teacher. Initially, my friends, you may study from a few texts, from a couple texts, but soon you will find yourself pulled to go deeper into the study and practice of the teachings of one scripture or teaching or master that you feel intuitively or inwardly drawn to. Be careful that you do not prejudge the teachings. At the same time, know that you are going to verify these teachings in your actual life by doing it. You are completely ready to experiment with them and put them into practice and know for yourself. You are not taking them because A, B, and C has said them. A, B, and C has said them, that's wonderful. But to take that, to embrace it, and to practice it wholeheartedly is a verification of the scripture. This is a very important part of the study. Not only to know by reading, by all of that, but to know by direct experience. This cycle must be complete. You start off at reading, listening, hearing, or whatever, then you verify it and know for yourself. When you know for yourself, the cycle of learning is complete. Academic knowledge or whatever else, my friends, only promotes vanity. If that becomes the end, there is often vanity in there. You are not studying the scripture. Through the scripture or teaching, you are studying yourself. When this spirit lodges in the heart, there is great enthusiasm to actualize the teaching. And this gives you a tremendous release of energy that is needed towards this. The first three points that we have spoken about so far, which is, they lay the groundwork for living the teaching, doing what needs to be done, accepting however things turn out. These out here lay the groundwork for this living, actual living in accordance with the teaching. Action, my friends, is then seen as duty. And you might think duty means bland or dry or dull. What good is that? No, it's beautiful, my friends, because when action is seen as duty, There is a revealing of your true nature. The joy is not so much in anything else, but the joy of the fullness, knowing the fullness of being, who you are. It's one thing to attain things and conditions. It's another thing to realize your true nature or the expansive nature of your own self, that I am all this. Habit surges, but you observe habit so it falls on itself unused when you see life as duty. This is why it is so important. Habit always tries to interfere with what's in it for me, my interests. When you see life and action as duty, the what's in it for me weakens. The little me starts dwindling down into an airy nothing. When that dwindles down, the largeness or the largess of one's personality or true nature is experienced. So all action is threaded by this sense of duty. When it is, natural simplicity increases. See, my friends, we become more complex because of purpose. What's in it for me is my purpose in that action. So you may go there and say, I'm part of a team, I'm part of all that, but we always think about my interest first. If that is below the windshield or below the hood, my friends, it's still there. You may hide it from others, but it's still there. In the hours of meditation, all that we are going to see is a steady stream of our own agenda, our mind that is still active because we don't live our life with this principle of simplifying, of making one. Therefore, all action has to be seen for the same purpose. We let go of all these notions in our mind when we do action because it needs to be done wholeheartedly. My friends, there is no loss in this inner expansion. There is only gain. When you realize that there is so much joy, there is so much of a sense of fulfillment, there is so much of a sense of delight in doing something wholeheartedly because it needs to be done and letting it go at that without worrying about what comes. What comes will come naturally. You need not run after it. Today, we discuss the fourth of the seven states or planes of wisdom, Sattvapatti, or the natural turning away from sense pleasure and dwelling in truth. We also talked about four simple ways towards this. Let us review them. One, do what needs to be done on its own merit, which is because it needs to be done. Two, refrain from doing what should not be done. And how? By instead doing what should be done because it needs to be done. Three, live a simple and natural life. Simplicity, first being simple, and then the natural life is a corollary or what follows. The natural life follows being simple. Four, live in accordance with the teachings, engage in appropriate activity, and accept whatever happens. Do what needs to be done, do your best, and accept the rest. Next time, we continue with the seven states or planes of wisdom by discussing the fifth state, Asamshakti, or natural and total non-attachment or freedom. Friends, thank you for joining me today. To download this video, its audio, or PDF handout, kindly visit suryadevananda.org. Thank you.